Warning, this is the ASMR episode.
Listener discretion is advised.
Mary Jane.
Peter. It's wrong that we should only be half alive. Half of ourselves. I love you. So here I am, standing in your doorway. I've always been standing in your doorway. Isn't it about time somebody saved your life?
I love you. And no offense, but you're wrong.
Is it about what?
You're wrong about us being on different paths. We're not on different paths. You're my path. And you're always gonna be my path. I know there's a million reasons why we shouldn't be together, I know that. But I'm tired of them. I'm tired with every single one of them. We've all got to make a choice. Right? Why choose you?
You must think I'm a fool.
I think you are incredible. I only wish I really knew the woman under this mask.
Then maybe it's time you did. Why don't I take off my mask? And you take off yours.
Your shots are so good.
I'd love to shoot you sometime.
Peter Parker. Peter.
Parker! Miss Brent! That's not the position I hired you for.
Welcome to the 11th episode of Lonely Hearts, the romance comics podcast, in which we discuss four guys, well, usually four, discuss...
Romance comics?
Romance comics.
Romance and romance in comics.
Yes.
Romance in comics, or yes. Point blank, romance comics.
Yeah.
Today we're one person fewer than normal.
We killed him and ate him.
Not really.
Not in that order.
He's just not here. Marty's not here.
But we do have Bass.
Hey.
We do have Fern.
Hello.
And we do have Siskoid. Or Mike, call me what you will.
We will.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. Today we call our episode, The Many Loves of Peter Parker.
Spider-Man. Come on, guys. Spider-Man.
Does whatever a spider-pig.
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 Okay.
I like Spider-Pig.
Peter Parker's had a lot of girlfriends over the years, love interests. Mm-hmm. That hasn't always been consummated. Since he is the... your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, I guess that makes sense. He's very friendly.
He's very friendly.
He's very hands-on.
So what we thought we might do today is look at the many, many, many love interests of Peter Parker
since the
60s. We're each going to do a little top five, and we've even got Marty's top one, so he will be with us in spirit.
In spirit.
Gross, gross spirit.
he's a lot of ectoplasm.
Ugh.
Yeah. But first, what eras of Spider-Man are we familiar with? Because obviously you people at home will want to scream at your podcasting machine because we're not naming your favorite.
Yeah, you will be screaming.
Every episode we do, I'm pretty sure someone's screaming at us. I take that as like a default value. Someone is just angry as all get out at us for saying stuff.
And now we're touching on, like, holy ground, Spider-Man. So.
Spider-Man is very important to a lot of people. If we don't name your favorite, maybe we weren't reading during those times. Maybe it's a 1990s character, for example.
Well, you know what? You can always share it in the comments or something like that.
In the 90s, half the time it was Ben Reilly.
We don't care about that.
He had, like, four or five girlfriends.
Peter Parker, Ben Reilly, that would be the clone situation.
Yeah.
Paradox of, would you have sex with your clone?
We are not going to get into that. And?
Aw, man. I came here for nothing.
What about
my
you,
top
Bess?
Five was Ben Reilly all the way down.
Let's ask Bess.
All right.
He's a level-headed person.
No, he isn't. First of all, he wrote Spider-Man, one word, no hyphen.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I know.
You are banned, sir.
You know what?
That makes him Jewish, Spider-Man.
One of the great Spider-Mans. I didn't really read Spider-Man a lot. I watched the old 60s or late 50s cartoon.
60s. Yes. 60s. It can't be late 50s because there was no Spider-Man.
Oh, I don't really.
Yeah.
And I've always been a DC guy. And I've been reflecting on that. Why was I a DC guy? And I think because...
Batman.
Well, no, not really. I think it's something with... every Marvel thing was always in New York. Mm-hmm. And New York was a real city that I never saw and didn't really touch me in any way. But, you know, Metropolis could be any... Where,
it could be Bacaraquette, is what you're saying.
It could be Hôtel Boujagan. These are real places, people. You can find them on Google Maps.
It could be Toronto.
Atlantic Canada. Toronto.
Yeah.
The only place with a town called Dildo. Oh. Right?
Also, Fourche Apolline.
Oh, yeah. My God.
So, yeah, I didn't really read a lot of Spider-Man. Read a bit in the early 90s.
It's okay.
Late 80s, early 90s.
That's fine.
And,
Venom Fever.
And, you know, the movies and a little bit of animated cartoons and stuff like that in the early 2000s, I'm thinking.
Okay, so your choices might be a little mainstream.
Oh, I'm everywhere.
That's fine. What about you, Fern?
Well, okay, I started off with Spider-Man with the 60s cartoon as well, because it was part of my Saturday morning pilgrimage in front of the TV
back
in the 80s.
Of course. That and Hercules.
Amazing Hercules, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends?
Absolutely. Not that one.
Oh,
although,
man.
I did catch a few of those episodes.
That was great.
That was
I'm
great.
Specifically talking the just the first animated series.
Right.
Then there was,
Rocket Robin.
Rocket Robin. Yeah, that style.
Yeah.
Then early 90s, there was the revival of that show. It was just brand new animation. And I really got into that one. That one was really, at the time for me, it was really good. I loved it. I watched a few.
It did a lot of the storylines from the comics.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the music was awesome.
Yeah, it was a guitarist from Aerosmith. I don't know his name. My first Spider-Man comic book was some weird insert I got in like a Game Pro monthly. And it was a story about Spider-Man and Typhoid Mary. And that was weird. Because it jumped from me reading the comic strips in the Gazette that my dad would buy on, like, the weekend edition. So it was, like, 3-4 panels. Spider-Man, yeah! Okay, he's in high school. To, hey, him and Mary Jane are married, and clearly their marriage has been on for a few years. And, yeah, it was a bit of a disconnect. And it ended with basically a lot of the video games and the Tobey Maguire run. I have not watched The Amazing Spider-Man with Garfield. I like to imagine that it's actual the cat as a Spider-Man. In my head, that's how it works. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay, so I read a lot more of these comics.
We know you did.
Yes.
I read the 60s run up through at least... through the early 70s, at least through Gwen Stacy's death. In reprint form, Marvel Tales. And,
right.
And then I read... the 70s are a bit of a blank. And then I... sporadically through the 80s.
That's true for everybody.
And then there was the late 80s when McFarlane jumped on the title. Yeah. I know I read it through him
and
Eric Larson. So the early Venom era.
Okay.
And then, of course, the 90s hit. I dropped Marvel entirely. Came back to Spider-Man.
Too many pouches.
Came back to Spider-Man after they undid the Mary Jane marriage.
Okay.
When he sold his soul to Mephisto.
Yeah, and he rebooted. Not rebooted, he just erased everything?
It erased that storyline.
Okay.
Didn't erase anything else, but it erased the fact that he had been married to Mary Jane.
It's
and then
in particular.
And it allowed him to date again. And,
And yet they kept going around that drain of... They felt like they knew each other, and it was
Well, no, they knew each other.
No, but like
it was they had the relationship, but they'd broken it off because of pressures. Anyways, I hated the idea that they would undo the marriage. Like it seemed like a cheap thing to do, and the editors were all going, "Well, we need a young hip Spider-Man. Like, you know, you can't be married and interesting."
So basically, they just screamed out Mulligan and
they mulliganed it.
Yeah.
But those comics after that I read consistently those comics up through today.
That's great.
Yeah. So I thought it was a really, really good...
Wow, so you know you're a Spider-Man.
...run of comics. I think so, and it's too bad Marty's not here, because he also read a lot of that the Dan Slott era, the second half of that big piece.
And he is the smart one of the group.
Yeah, well, we'll manage. And people, don't worry, we're going to get into it now, but if you're tuning in for Romance Comics Theater, we do a little theater piece every show... That's coming up towards the end of the show.
Yeah.
So skip ahead now to the end. If that's all you care about, just skip ahead. You know, screw Spider-Man. I want to hear people fake kiss on radio.
Who's
whatever.
This Peter Parker guy?
Whatever turns your crank. Okay. So we each have
a one-hour podcast, and you're just telling fast forward through all this bullshit. Yeah. Go to the 3-minute part.
It's reverse marketing.
Go listen to the part where men were men and women were objects for about 3 minutes.
Look, we're part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Go and listen to Who's Who.
Yeah, actually, that's a great show.
Go and listen to, you know, Invasion First Strike or Ohatmu.
Well, Invasion First Strike, like, the hosts are pretty bad. But Secret Origins is really good, you know.
They paid me to say this. They paid me to say this.
Yeah, well,
come on.
The beer's in the fridge. Okay. Okay. We're going to count up to number one.
Yeah.
These are our favorites, not the most viable possible relationships.
Viability is up to the writers, really.
Yeah.
So, you know.
That, and I would even argue that Spider-Man has no viability with any of these women whatsoever.
Well, that's true for every superhero.
Yeah.
No,
but the
just,
Peter Parker
just for
look.
Him. Just
the Parker
Peter,
look.
Peter Parker,
it,
yeah. Period.
Okay.
None.
We looked at our three lists of top fives.
Well, four. Marty only has one written 5 times down.
You're right. We'll get to that one at the end.
Yes.
It's a little bonus surprise.
It's like a treat.
But there are a lot of girls that we did not put on our list, so let's give them honorable mentions.
Please.
There are way too many to name all, everyone who's ever had a date with Peter Parker, but many of them were pretty important. Let's mention Liz Allen is probably one of the more important ones that we did not mention, because she was in the very first Spider-Man story.
Oh.
She was like his high school crush, but she dated Flash Thompson.
Oh.
Don't you mean Eugene?
His name is Eugene? Yeah, it's Eugene.
His first name is Eugene. That's why he calls himself Flash.
Nobody's got Flash on their...
That explains the anger there.
On their birth certificates.
Shut up, nerd. Give me your money. Okay, Eugene.
She eventually gravitated towards Peter, and it was like her versus Betty kind of thing.
Okay.
But her brother was the Molten Man, a villain, and then whatever, drama.
That can't happen.
No.
Also, in our honorable mentions, we should mention Deborah Whitman. He dated Deborah a long time during the 70s, during that era when I wasn't really reading.
Okay.
But I do want to mention her because she found out he was Spider-Man.
Oh.
And she'd been in an abusive relationship before, and Peter was sort of abusing her himself by, you know, always leaving, lying to her. So she felt very mistreated, and she was in therapy, starting to be a thing.
He was being abusive by omission, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. So she was in a bad relationship, in an unhealthy relationship. So she goes to a therapist. When she finds out he's Spider-Man, she brings that to the therapist, to the psychologist, and she thinks she's crazy.
Well, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, my boyfriend is Spider-Man? What the hell? How can you... I mean, it sounds crazy.
It does.
And that's not even the crazy part.
No, we had sex on the ceiling. It's crazy. My boyfriend's Spider-Man.
So she eventually leaves town, a broken person.
Aww.
Oh, that's very sad.
Michelle Gonzalez, who was Carly Cooper's roommate. She was a district attorney, or a defense attorney, rather. Like, more of a joke character.
Okay.
She was perpetually angry. This was later date. It was, like, recent.
She's like a non-Hulk She-Hulk?
Fiery Latin blood.
It's like he was in a relationship where the girl was never satisfied. And it was sort of a joke, because he would bond with the roommate instead, and Carly Cooper does show up on one of our lists. So
that's why
she's not an honorable mention. He dated a few superheroes, some of whom will be featured on our list.
Like Wolverine.
I think he had dates with 3 people called Spider-Woman.
Well, that's kind of a death wish, though, because, you know, most spiders, they kill the male after.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Well, think about it this way. You can either tempt fate or become a monk. Choose. If you are spider-based, it's either you try and have sex and survive, or guess what? I'm going into the priesthood.
Learn to dodge or go as a priest.
Exactly.
And also Silk, which a character that has her own book now. She's part of the Spider family, and they made it so that when she and Peter are close together, they immediately want to have sex. And,
okay, so it's like creating a hormone thing, like a pheromone thing?
Yeah, so I wouldn't count this as a relationship.
No. Someone explained it to me. It was like the Speed Force, but the Spider Force, and there's a whole family of these dudes, and if they get together, they just want to make babies.
Just those two. Okay, they're like two important people in the Spider Totem thingamajig.
Spider-Verse?
Craven needs to get to work.
She doesn't count. She didn't make a list.
No.
And I also want to give a shout-out to Anna Maria Marconi, who was the...
From the Marconi family.
She didn't date Peter Parker, really. She dated...
She just texted him?
She dated Dr. Octopus when he was in the Peter Parker body.
Okay.
But when...
The
Superior Spider-Man.
And I know of Spider-Man. Right. Yeah. I just never read it.
She was a little person. She went to university with... Doc Ock, who was trying to finish Peter Parker's doctorate.
When Doc Ock was in his body, did he still talk like Peter, or did he take his Otto Octavius, I have the sick German's accent, I am the Peter?
He never had that accent in the comics, but he did speak like that, with the Doctor Doom-like pronouncements.
No one speaks like Doctor Doom, except for Doctor
Doom. Well, Dr. Octopus came
who's
close.
Who's also they're not an actual doctor.
They're both doctors.
Dr. Doom's not an actual doctor. Mr. Fantastic is a doctor, goes by Mr. He doesn't use his honorific title. Dr. Doom, washed out.
Well, you know what?
Mr. Fantastic.
Well, I know it's Mr. Fantastic, but if he went by Dr. Fantastic,
it'd be
that's
even
just
better.
Pompous.
No.
That's just pompous.
The man can stretch. He's already pompous.
That's being an asshole. You can stretch and Dr. Fantastic.
He invented that ultimate nullifier thing that threatens Galactus. He's like, hey,
smart plastic
stop
man.
Stop eating the Chrysler building or I'm going to destroy you. I'm going to remove
point
you.
Point of order. This is not on topic.
So this is why, you know.
That's why. Now you know why.
Don't make me take out my ultimate nullifier. I will erase you and myself from existence.
So eventually Peter had to tell this girl that she met Peter Parker while he was Dr. Octopus.
Right.
She thought he was brilliant. They hit it off.
Yeah.
He was quite sweet to her and she to him. But when Peter Parker took over his body again.
Right.
You had to have a conversation with her, which she sort of noticed he was different.
That must have been the weirdest breakup in history. Yeah, you know what? Doc Ock was in my body, and,
It's like a weird excuse, huh?
Yeah. It's a weird excuse.
Those are the honorable mentions.
Yeah, okay.
That's great. Honorable.
Bravo. Let's get into the dishonorable mention. No.
Our
actual list of favorite romantic interests for Peter Parker.
Okay.
Bass, who is your... number five on this list.
My number five is an alternate universe romance. It's Kitty Pryde.
Isn't that the ultimate one?
It is, actually.
Right, because Colossus was gay.
Which
is fine.
I don't really care why, but my reasons why, because I didn't read a lot of Marvel, but Kitty Pryde was one of my favorite characters. She was like a comic book crush when I was younger. So, and we have a tendency to live vicariously through Peter and Spider-Man, and all of a sudden, this guy, he's going out with Kitty. So I'm like, you know what? This is part of my top five now. She has a cool power, and X-Men, do I need to, go further than this? And,
please do.
And she's sweet.
I'm
she's
calling
nice.
Your bluff. Please do. Please go further.
She has a dragon.
Well, I don't know. In the Ultimate Universe.
But she had a dragon when I was younger. Yeah.
But I'm there with you. Yeah. Kitty Pryde. When Kitty Pryde was 16, I was 16.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Definitely the girl next door that you have a crush on. But she's not on my list.
Okay.
I didn't go Alternate Universe.
Understandable.
On this.
Understandable.
No.
I'm kind of the weird guy. I didn't
know. No.
That's fine. Me.
Once we get to my number five, you'll look normal.
What is your number five?
The alien symbiote.
Well, that makes sense, though.
Yes, because, the alien symbiote, the whole Venom precursor, whatever, when he had the black outfit.
Yeah.
Before he knew that it was an actual living creature, a symbiotic alien from wherever it comes from, it was the first time when it bonded with Peter, because it was on J. Jonah's kid, came Man Wolf, whatever, took it off.
In the comics, he found it on Secret Wars World, on Battle World.
It was regenerating. He needed a new suit because of the suit.
See, I had read that.
Yeah.
Battle World.
There. That was where they actually did that in that cartoon show. And it was very weird. Beyonder looks like a disco man, whatever.
Beyonder always in the comics.
Yeah.
He's a disco guy.
Yeah. So the alien symbiote, it had never felt emotion at all before. It was just an alien. So literally the word alien to everything on Earth. It hits Peter, starts to feel love, hate, all this through him, and when he gets rid of it, because it's a symbiote, it's parasite, it's trying to take over his life, he needs to get rid of it. It starts to feel panic, everything that Peter's feeling. And at that point, when it bonds with Eddie, who's on the verge of committing suicide, it feels love again through the hatred that Eddie has towards Spider-Man. And they say, if you can love someone, it is an emotion so strong that you can also hate that person. And vice versa. And it created...
So when Spider-Man meets Venom...
Yeah, and
It's like, oh, damn, my ex is here.
It is.
It is,
to the point that it is as disarming, because they kind of set up Venom to be the ultimate Spider-Man villain, and they wanted to do that at one point, but I'm pretty sure they failed miserably in that aspect because Green Goblin. But Venom was one of the only characters that did not trigger his spider sense, which is his main power. I don't care about super strength, agility, all that.
You don't?
No, because everything depends on his spider sense.
Well, I thought webbing.
No.
Webbing's not a power.
Peter Parker made those web shooters. Technically, he could have still made those web shooters.
Technically.
Because, you know what? He could have still made them because that's just from Peter Parker.
Yeah,
he could have gone the full Iron Man outfit because he's that smart. So the super strength and agility and wall climbing, that's all spider related. That's great. But the whole point that he has that spider sense, which allows him to use these powers to the best advantage that he can, I think that's his major power.
Man, I need
and
to
the
read-
and the Venom suit removes that from him. And Eddie, and then Max Gargan had it at one point, and then now Flash.
Okay, can I stop you here? Because what you're saying is...
No,
what you're saying about Spider-Man is actually kind of interesting and profound, which is freaking me out.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah, you put some thought into
this. I did.
Wow.
Marvel is my jam. So it's that kind of love-hate relationship between Peter and his ex, except that his ex is a weird alien creature from the deep depths of cosmos.
So really, basically, Venom is the embodiment of all's fair in love and war.
Yes,
and
it's his bitchy ex.
Oh, wow.
And every time...
And we're all disarmed.
Right.
Yeah.
And through a lot of the stories at the first part, the symbiote was just... Okay, I really want to get back with you, Spider-Man. Can I get back with you?
Yeah.
So it's a toxic relationship, which is why, again, I think that none of his goddamn relationships ever work.
And why is this not your number one?
Because.
We'll get to that.
But we did skip over. I see you had notes on honorable mentions.
Honorable mentions,
they're in that same kind of line. So why don't you tell us now?
Well, my honorable mentions. Norman Osborn, I tied him with J. Jonah Jameson. Because these two, it's just obsession. It's straight up obsession. Norman Osborn and Peter Parker, they know who each other are, and yet...
They have this secret.
Yeah, it's like Batman and the Joker. They can't really exist without one another, and they just do this weird dance around each other. J. Jonah Jameson, he needs Spider-Man. Get me pictures of Spider-Man!
These are kind of one-way relationships.
Yeah.
They're obsessed with him.
Yes. And abusive.
And abusive. And, of course, MJ. I'm talking about Michael Jordan, number 23 of the Chicago Bulls, greatest of all time! Honorable mention.
I don't know why that one.
See, this is more what I thought we'd be getting into. Right? My own number five?
What is your number
five? Okay, my own number five is Betty Brant.
Ooh. Well, she's my number two.
She's my number three.
Well, let's talk about Betty Brant then. Betty Brant was the older woman.
Yes.
Because she was the secretary, J. Jonah's secretary. He was still a kid. It's kind of odd and interesting, an older woman scenario.
Are you trying to seduce me?
We don't,
Mrs. Jones?
Well,
Betty was like the first woman in his life. Like,
yes.
Maybe there was, Liz Allen was the high school crush, but Betty was a real woman in a professional setting, and perhaps she was very young. Maybe she was, you know, maybe she could have been 17 and working there.
Yeah, right. But still, she's working. She's on her own.
She's the one Peter grew up to want to woo. So whatever other girls he fell in with,
yeah, I can
Betty
see that.
Was like the person he was aspiring to, but it could never work. And when they did have a relationship, the reason it didn't work was because he was getting himself into too much danger, and she wanted security.
Well, yeah.
So she didn't know he was Spider-Man, but she thought he was going out of his way to photograph Spider-Man and taking risks.
Yeah.
And she asked him not to do that, and he wouldn't. Which is, I mean, today Betty's going out with Flash Thompson, the new Venom.
Eugene.
Or she was, and she had the same problems. Like, I think she gravitated towards Flash because at this point he'd been an Iraq veteran, had lost his legs, and he's not going to get into any more danger except he had access to the Venom symbiote, and that also destroyed that relationship.
Yeah.
So he wanted to be with her, but that's exactly what you were saying earlier. She can't be with him because he's Spider-Man. So Spider-Man will always destroy his relationships.
Yes. I put her at number 3. The reason I don't see it working is that's an office relationship. Just on the plane of Peter Parker, Betty Brant, they work great together. But they're 8 hours a day at work. And then you go
home. I don't think the photographer is at work all day.
Well, no, but
he
still.
Comes in.
He comes in. Here's da-da. And then he has to work on, like, the editing, etc. You know, he's not always there at work, but he's still at work a lot of the time.
I believe he's not.
I believe he is.
I believe he's... This guy, it's a perfect, perfect job for Peter Parker.
Yes.
He comes in with photos already developed in his basement. He doesn't have to spend any time at work.
Okay, maybe true. All right. But still, it's an
office. He's not a staffer.
It's still an office thing, and you don't eat where you poop.
Well, he'd always have to go back to that office.
Yeah.
Even if it didn't work out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's touchy.
But still, number 3 is pretty high on the list.
It's high on the list for number 3.
Yes, because number 4 is...
Okay, okay.
Well, she's my number... She's my number 2.
Oh, that's very high.
Yeah, she's very high on the list because of the cartoons. And I loved her in the cartoons. And she was the only woman in his life in the cartoons. And I'm also a big James Bond fan. Oh, so there's this weird Moneypenny thing where, I call it Moneypenny syndrome. I do have that.
Well, that's the angle they play in the Sam Raimi movies. She is literally Moneypenny to J. Jonah's M.
And she's got attitude. I mean, she stands up to J. Jonah Jameson once in a while. And, you know, and the double B name. I just love that. I love the double B's and the double D's and the double P's. I love it.
And she's played by Elizabeth Banks in the movies?
Oh, I mean,
bonus.
Hello.
Yeah, big time.
Another pair of B's.
So I just...
Hello, nurse.
To me, Betty Brant, number 2.
Did you just make a boob joke?
It wasn't on purpose. But it's...
Because Bass's was on purpose. I caught it. I just love alliteration.
Mm.
Show me them TTs.
Number 4. Number 4. Bass, why don't you...
All right, my number 4 will probably be on nobody's list.
Walrus Man.
Because, no, it's Carol Danvers.
And Captain Marvel.
And that's the only real reason is because I live vicariously through Pete. I call him Pete. Pistol Pete. Yeah. Grabby Sticky.
Grabby Sticky.
And you know what? He goes out with Captain Marvel. Yeah. I mean, Miss Marvel. I mean, she's incredible. She's...
Would you dare say she's marvelous?
She is. She's... Yeah. I mean, and everybody... Everybody wants to date a powerful woman. And you can't get any more
powerful. And many have. I have to say, Captain Marvel's been...
Well, she should.
Gone around the block.
She should. Damn it. She should. Can she come over in my neighborhood?
She was with War Machine recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. She goes for nerds. So, I mean, it's like dating Ronda Rousey in real life. I mean, you want somebody who can kick ass. Take names.
Right. That date did not go well.
I know.
That was not a long-standing relationship.
I checked it out. It was funny, though. But, you know, I just loved it.
I don't think he was man enough for her.
I don't think he was. Hey, he's kind of scrawny, you know. Hey, he's strong and everything. I don't... He's neighborhood. She's galaxy.
She's galaxy.
Yeah, yeah. She's a captain.
Yeah.
He's a neighborhood watch.
Exactly.
Well, Spider-Man has a whistle and a cell phone with 911 programmed into it.
That's right. Okay, Fern.
Yo.
You're number 4.
My number four.
Dare I ask?
Uncle Ben.
The rice?
Uncle Ben.
The original Ben Reilly?
No, his actual uncle.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Now,
the one,
of course,
the one with the great quote?
Yes, yes, the one with the great quote, which is, you know, with ultimate power comes laser eye beams. Or if the movie had been directed by Zack Snyder, his great quote would have been, kill them all. Spider-Man snapping necks for 90 minutes.
Winning wrestling. Just rich. Getting rich.
Hey.
Just
Macho Man died for our
Let's
sins.
Not go there.
Anyways. Now, Uncle Ben, and this is... Remember when I was talking about the 90s cartoon? This goes back to that. Because the series finale... And I'm going to spoil something that's like 20 years old.
You can't spoil that. That's already spoiled.
Okay. The very end of that is Spider Carnage. Yes, that wonderful character.
Right, Carnage.
No, Spider Carnage.
Oh, there's a difference with Carnage and
yes,
Spider Carnage?
Yes, there's Carnage, which is Cassidy, whatever,
yep.
And then Spider Carnage, which is Peter Parker with the Carnage symbiote, and it's kind of like his suit. Okay. Yeah,
he takes it from Cletus.
Yes, Cletus. Cletus Cassidy. It's dumb. Cletus Cassidy uses the Spot, a wonderful Z-list villain,
yep.
His portal machine to essentially destroy the multiverse. So he starts opening portals everywhere. And then Spider-Man, who is helped by Madame Web, goes through all these dimensions and timelines to find all the Spider-Mans to get their effort together.
I think it's Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
I think it's Spider-Man.
Is it plural, like cactus is cacti and
yeah,
octopus is
it's
octopi?
Spider-Man. Okay, the Spider-Mai.
The Spider-Mai. They have to basically band all together to fight Spider Carnage, who is holding all the cards. And this one Spider-Man...
It's a poker game.
Yes, it's also a poker game. So they go through every Spider-Man, and the one who actually finds the solution is the Spider-Man from our timeline, who's a dude in a Spider-Man costume at the mall, who has no powers whatsoever, basically goes... Is there a timeline that Uncle Ben is still alive? And all the Spider-Men look at each other and go, what? Find him, put him in front of Spider-Carnage, and he goes, stop it. Just stop it. And he does.
And this is so, very whimsical for something so serious.
Yes. Yeah. And the very, like, the last shot is the heavens are opening. There's red lightning everywhere. Earth is going to shit. And just Uncle Ben, who's just standing there. And
but
says,
are you saying that Uncle Ben has a romantic relationship?
It is very platonic. It is platonic for me. You
well,
know, I'm pretty sure there are some shippers out there that have made it absolutely not platonic.
Please do not.
But let's not go there. But for him, it is a relationship, one of his loves. It's a platonic love because he didn't have his parents, so Uncle Ben is his father.
But technically, it's not a romance. Is there kissing or heavy petting?
No, there's neither kissing nor heavy
petting. Of course not.
There is hugging, like, end-of-the-world hugging.
But it's family. This is a family love.
Yes, but it's a love that can transcend dimensions and time.
We did call
the
show Peter Parker's Many Loves.
Yeah. This one dead person for all these versions, when they find him, is still able to go and get that one Peter Parker back from the brink and bring him back.
And this was all resolved by Comic-Con Spidey?
Yeah. And because he managed to think of it, his reward is talking to the original Spider-Man, or the main universe one, and said, I have a friend who would really like to meet you. And the last shot is actual Spider-Man with Stan Lee clinging on his back as they're swinging around. And actual Stan Lee going, whoo-hee! It's hilarious.
Well, it kind of makes... I'm not sure I'm the Uncle Ben thing, but it kind of makes sense where, you know, the Spider-Verse and all this... Is it like the multiverse of Marvel comics like a big web?
There is that element. The Spider-Verse comics of recent years have talked
about
this.
Well, that's kind of cool. I can't lie. I like it.
My number four is Carly Cooper.
So, I don't know her.
The roommate of the other person we were talking about.
Right. And Carly is...
Sassy Latino.
Carly is a CSI. She's in CSI New York.
So I like that.
Yeah.
She's Wally West.
She was smart enough to figure out that there was a connection between Peter Parker and Spider-Man. Although he tried to lie about it and say, no, I just make his tools. You know, I just make his tech.
Oh, okay.
How do you take that picture from that angle 17 floors up?
Man. He's Lucius Fox in this story.
But I thought Carly was like a strong, independent character that, you know, would put these questions to him. Then she figured out he was Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Then she got really pissed that he was lying to her, and
rightfully
so. She went on a bender. She tried to get a Green Goblin tattoo just to piss him off. She wound up getting a Spider-Man tattoo
I'm
instead.
I'm liking this lady even more.
Wow, that's amazing.
She's a real New York girl.
Yes.
Is she one of those, because there was this big thing where there were like multiple lady cops. Lady cops everywhere. So is
that
is,
was
is
Halloween
she,
best.
Well,
that
she,
was Halloween.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
She doesn't wear a uniform. She's a CSI.
Okay, so is it one of those, all of a sudden there was a lot of lady cops everywhere.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. In comics. A lot of, I don't know why I'm... Maybe not. You know what?
I'm telling you.
Back
you
to our story. At least one lady cop.
Back to our story.
Yeah. So, Carly Cooper, for me, was like the most viable romantic entanglement Peter Parker had post-Mary Jane.
That one kind of could have worked.
Yeah, but
well,
all the lying.
He sabotages everything he does.
Yes.
So, you know.
Yeah.
But because she knew, because she was in on the secret, there could have been something there. It could have been a partnership.
Yeah.
And up to a certain point, there was. And I'm not sure where that relationship is right now. It may
it could be
salvageable.
So I, you know what? I didn't know this lady because I don't read really Spider-Man, but she sounds nice. I like her.
We're up to our top three. We're going to take a small break. Okay. Listen to an ad for another amazing podcast out there on the podcastosphere. I will be right back.
Okay.
Okay, doing the new promo. Do not say take the dare. Do not say take the dare. Okay, go. Hello, darling. Nice to see ya. It's me, J. David Weider, the Conway Twitty of podcasting. But please call me Dave. I host a show called Dave's Daredevil Podcast, where I talk about Marvel's Man Without Fear and Netflix superstar Daredevil. But I'm here to tell you that things have changed. Don't worry, I've still got more hornhead goodness than you can shake a billy club at and a desperado love for Daredevil. And episodes of the show still come out each and every Sunday. But now, Dave's Daredevil Podcast is part of the Two True Freaks Podcast Network. That's right, the show can now be found at twotruefreaks.com, home of Earth's mightiest podcasts. And if you haven't tried the show before, I see the want to in your eyes. So take the time to check out Dave's Daredevil Podcast, because sometimes you need a podcaster with a slow hand. Dave's Daredevil Podcast, every Sunday at twotruefreaks.com. Take the dare. I have no self-control.
And we're back. Man from Uncle. We're counting up to our number one romance or love of Spider-Man.
One Spider-Man love.
And so we're up to our top three.
Woo!
Bass.
Lady number three is Gwen Stacy.
Oh.
Ah, yes. Gwen Stacy.
Gwen Stacy. Mm.
Number three is still middling.
Well, you know what?
I have her at number three as well.
You know what? I got her at number two. She's even at number three, she's still on the podium.
Oh, yeah.
Gwen Stacy, for me, she's cool, smart, beautiful. You know, she's like this forbidden fruit, though, because her dad's a cop, and she's, you know, she's independent. She's, I don't know. I think, once again, living vicariously through Spider-Man. I know I just...
Super Spider-Man.
I'm going to get beat down for that one.
Even Stan Lee made that mistake.
Well,
Spider-Man number two, somebody calls him Superman.
Oh, wow.
Just a typo. Yeah.
Wow.
But, you know.
And it wasn't Stan Lee trying to steal away Superman.
To steal Superman's trademark? No.
But and,
if I put Superman in here, he'll be mine. Yes.
And then I thought, Superman, yeah. That's a good name. Extra points for Emma Stone. I could watch 3 hours of Emma Stone reading.
I'm not sure she'd be so high on my list for Emma Stone.
See,
well, there you go.
Bryce Dallas Howard for me.
Mm.
Mm, guys, come on.
I've blanked out most of Spider-Man 3. But you haven't watched The Amazing Spider-Man
films. I have not. But I know Emma Stone.
She is the number one reason to watch those films.
I mean, she is...
Yeah.
The first of these films is actually better than people give it credit for. But even the bloated... thing that is Amazing Spider-Man 2, which is like many things at once. Every scene with Emma Stone in it,
it's great.
Yeah,
it's great. And in my opinion, the best Spider-Man suit, it's in The Amazing Spider-Man 2. It has the most accurate Spider-Man suit.
In the comics, it's not that she's necessarily forbidden fruit, necessarily. Maybe she was at first, but it's that she's dead. She is the lost love. Even if we say, well, Mary Jane was always his soulmate or whatever, there's still this where we don't know where this would have gone.
Yeah, and it's a real loss. She died, so, you know, it's he can never have her back. We'll never know.
Well, it's the Marvel-verse. You know, she's back next week.
Well, she's already back. Well, she's back. She's the she's Spider-Gwen.
Yeah.
She's a Spider-Man of an alternate Earth, but she's a teenager. So it's not like the today's Spider-Man can be with her or would want to be with her. But at the same time, I always thought Gwen was a little bit kind of the high-class girl. We're going to compare her to Mary Jane somehow. Oh, and I know Mary Jane became a top model and all that eventually, but Mary Jane was always like the girl next door, the sexy girl next door, and Gwen was a little more prim and proper.
Yeah, Gwen was the Veronica.
Yes.
She was
and Mary Jane was the Betty.
Yes.
Right. Or Betty was the Betty, in my opinion, but
granted. But you have her higher than us.
Yeah, I have her at second place. I got her on numero dos. Because, exactly, everything we've brought out, she died. We don't know how it would have progressed in kind of the main canonical Spider-Man history. Mary Jane was always number one, and it pretty much was visible from the start, because it always goes... That one line that Aunt May says in the Sam Raimi movies, where Peter was like, Aunt May, is that an angel? They set it up that Mary Jane is always going to be number one. She's the girl next door, all that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But for me, Gwen Stacy was the first girl that Peter didn't have a huge obsession with from the sidelines. Like, he was
I think she dated Harry before that. So, she was like the girlfriend of a friend.
Right. So it was a more natural, organic them becoming a relationship and a couple, and of course it ended tragically, but it was more, honestly, out of all of these, even though she's number two, I would have said that Gwen Stacy would have been the relationship that would have worked out the best for Peter Parker. I think more so than Mary Jane.
I think that there was a lot of angst all across his life. That's basically the point.
Right.
But during the days when he was with Gwen, that's why it was so tragic.
Right.
If you kill Gwen when they're really happy, then it is a tragedy.
Right.
So it was a relationship that was allowed to get the best before Jerry Conway just, you know, snatched it away.
Snapped it away.
Yeah. And it
snicked it away.
Snicked.
I believe the sound was snicked.
Or was snicked. It snicked. Number two.
We're in number two.
Right. Number two.
That's your number two.
Yeah.
Yours was Betty.
Yeah.
And mine was a new entry on the list. The Black Cat, Felicia Hardy.
No.
Wow.
The problem with Black Cat was always that she's
a thief.
And she's half white.
No, well, she was
half white.
Well, white hair, white hairy boots.
She's a Hitler Youth poster child. She's 110% white.
Oh, yeah, well, the color of her skin, but I'm thinking, you know, the hair and the gloves with the...
Like a tuxedo cat, is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay. Yes. Well, tuxedo cat, the problem with her was that...
That's a better name, to be fair.
She was in love with Spider-Man, not with Peter Parker.
See, that's what I was going to say.
That's why it's in my honorable mentions.
And that's why
a relationship between Spider-Man and Black Cat.
Well,
she's not even in my list because of that.
Peter Parker is Spider-Man.
Yes.
But this was the relationship where he, as Spider-Man, could patrol the streets with a partner.
Yeah.
So she's a full partner in his real life. Because all other relationships were destroyed by Spider-Man. This relationship was destroyed by Peter Parker. Because he couldn't stand, like, why don't you love me for me? Well, aren't you Spider-Man? Aren't you destroying all other relationships with the Spider-Man persona?
Yeah.
So why don't you go out with someone who likes you as Spider-Man, stick to being Spider-Man, that's what you're good at. The rest of your life is a mess. Wow.
And then when they take the costumes off, she's like, ew, you're a nerd.
No.
Get out of my penthouse.
That's one of the the fun things about Peter Parker. He started out as a skinny little nerd, and he has all these women,
ripped little nerd,
all these women fawning over him.
Yeah,
but the change was John Romita Sr. when he took over from Steve Ditko. Steve Ditko drew him as this anxious little nerd, and Romita Sr. was Marvel's big comics artist.
He buffed him up a little bit.
And people thought, they weren't sure if John Romita would be able to do this kind of work, superhero work, because everybody looked too pretty. Suddenly,
so he's the reason Norman Osborn has that weird cornrow hair.
No, that's Steve Ditko's problem. That's Steve Ditko.
That's very
but everyone in that family has weird cornrows.
If you look at Steve Ditko's last issue,
Yeah.
Where there is a Gwen, there is a Mary Jane. They don't look quite as pretty as they do. And then suddenly, everybody's cute. So it goes from Peter Parker wanting women that he cannot have to these women actually wanting him.
Well, it's something that happens in real life also. I mean...
he came into his own.
Yeah. Sometimes a lot of nerds, you know, high school nerds, or you know, we were all freaking nerds. But
what do you mean were?
The show is called Lonely Hearts.
Yeah. But you know, only one in an actual relationship is not here.
This is not bearing out your theory.
No, no, absolutely not. But you know what? I think as you grow up, as you become a man, I don't know, you get more appealing. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I just like the mirror. Maybe I'm just vain. I don't know. I look better than I did when I was, you know.
Anyway, you're 17. So vain, you probably think this podcast is about me.
Black Cat, smoking hot.
She is.
Yes.
She is.
Yes,
that is my irredeemable shag memorial
Catwoman
position
ripoff.
On the top five.
Catwoman ripoff.
Sure.
That's my thing also.
But she had the bad luck thing, which is great because Peter Parker always has bad luck.
Yeah.
Okay. So going out with a Black Cat makes perfect sense.
It's okay.
It's thematically coherent.
I mean, you got great arguments. I have nothing.
Again to that '90s cartoon show, Black Cat's father, the original The Cat Thief, voiced by John Philip Law, who was diabolic. So they brought that element of diabolic, which is actually still a comic book, apparently. In Italy and Europe. He's this famous cat burglar. The movie is hilarious. We should watch it one day. John Philip Law played the diabolic there, and they brought him on to voice the cat on the 90s cartoon. It was great.
Who played Felicia?
I don't remember.
Okay.
But she was there, and she was Black Cat, and they had the TV.
Yeah.
Well, it was probably Jennifer Hale. She voiced everything back in the 90s.
I'll have to ask the judges if they're going to accept that response. Okay, good. Yes.
Number one. Yeah. Obvious.
It's Mary Jane.
Mary Jane Watson is the number one. Who wants to go first to tell us why?
You know what? I only have one thing written down. It's, face it, Tiger. You just hit the jackpot.
That iconic line alone.
Just for that.
And the way the moment is prepared.
Yes.
Because it's forever.
And
you got to meet my niece. You got to meet my niece, Peter.
And for Pete, this is a fiasco. He just wants it to be over.
Please don't make me meet your friend's niece.
Exactly.
You only see her from the back or in shadow or just a voice off in another room. So there's anticipation there. Oh, is she going to be? What is she going to be? What's wrong with her? Absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Nothing at all. And she's confident. She's perfect. She's confident. She's funny. She gives him a little nickname off the bat.
Bess just said a redhead was perfect. Mark it down in your notebook.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Note the time. It is 8:16 p.m. on the year of our Lord, 2016, the 12th of April.
You know
Bess
what?
Bess likes ginger.
Oh my God.
I love gingers too, man. Redheads are hot.
I just came out. No, I don't usually like redheads. It's not the hair. It's the skin.
Do we have any female redhead listeners? Send me a message. I'm terribly lonely.
And it's nothing personal. I just, you know.
It's fine. It can be personal. You are allowed to like redheads.
I just don't usually do. And she's just perfect.
No, she's great. She's my number one because, you know, all the stuff we just mentioned. But throughout the comic, every time they present Mary Jane and Peter Parker in a story, be it movie, cartoon, comic book, or whatever, she is, first and foremost, his friend, his best friend. And I personally think that that's where the best relationships start. You need to be able to know a person on that level to then take it to the next step, especially with his deep, dark secret of, hey, guess what? I'm Spider-Man. You kind of have to be on a friendship level that is above and beyond the normal to go, okay, I don't approve of you hanging off of the Empire State Building fighting the lizard, but you know what? You're really good at it, and it scares me, but I'm going to let you do it anyways because it kind of helps a shit ton of people.
I think she has the same sense of responsibility that, you know, that is part of his ethos.
Yeah. Exactly.
But yeah, you win the show, Fern, because I think that's the best argument that I've heard.
It is. Although, and
the fact that she's beautiful and intelligent, you know, at one point is this more of writer's fantasy? Yes, of course. But You know what? I've seen relationships of the skinny, weird nerd getting the hot girl, and they work like gangbusters together. I've seen that happen. So it's not just a comic book trope. It's stuff that actually happens in real life.
So you're saying Baudelaire is right?
Oh, of course. Yes, exactly. Baudelaire,
you're saying that Baudelaire is right, because Baudelaire said, love is friendship on fire.
Oh, yes. And she's a redhead. It's mas en fuego.
So, yeah. He also compared his lover to a dead carcass.
Well, of course he did.
Hey, you know what? Baudelaire. You know what? La petite mort, so whatever.
But you know what? Minus points for, you know, the movie Mary Jane I didn't like.
Oh, well.
Just because I don't like Kirsten Dunst. Not personally. As
you don't
as,
know her?
As no, I don't. Even in every movie, but as Mary Jane, I don't think that was the direction I would have went with. I think she was the it girl back then, but I don't think I would have went that way.
Marty's number one is not Mary Jane.
It is number one through five.
So he left us with this wisdom, which we will try to sell.
By the way, he's not dead. He just can't be here.
Yeah.
We're talking about him as if he's dead, but he's not.
No, he's fine. His number one through five is Aunt May. So that's some of your Uncle Ben incest bullshit again.
No.
Kind of is.
No. I think his is the incest version of Aunt May. My Uncle Ben is more of the Christ Redemptor version of paternal love.
Well, his Aunt May, if I can make Marty's argument.
Yeah, give us the elevator pitch.
I imagine that his argument is that Aunt May is the woman in Peter Parker's life.
Yeah. She's the dominant woman.
He's lied to all these other girls. Yeah. He's let them down. Mm-hmm. But the one person he cannot let down, refuses to let down, and feels the most horrible when he lets down, is Aunt May. So,
oh, definitely.
That's why through most of the 60s and 70s, she was always going to the hospital. She was always on death's door.
All the time.
Because that would hurt Spider-Man more than anything.
Oh, definitely.
And there's something to it. I think we spoke about this before the show, that Aunt May deserves her own episode.
She does. Oh, yeah. She does.
Definitely.
She's had some interesting romances, and it'd be interesting to revisit those.
I need to read some of that.
Yeah, there's something super interesting about the fact that in the early 60s stories, she dated Dr. Octopus.
She almost got married to him.
Almost got married to Dr. Octopus.
She almost became May Octopus.
So yeah. There is a big Oedipus complex kind of thing going on there, because
the Octopus complex.
The father figure, the Octopus complex. Octopus is the father figure that Spider-Man, that Peter Parker wants to beat, needs to beat.
Right.
And the evil, seeing your father as evil.
Yeah. Right.
And so there's a strange jealousy there, where Aunt May is the mother.
Right.
And Dr. Octopus becomes the father that she must destroy.
Not only that,
destroy.
That he's one of his villains, he's also an intellectual on par with Peter Parker. If not, Otto Octavius is, you know, even brighter than
According
Peter Parker.
To him, he's brighter.
Right.
But isn't that always the way?
Right. So it's a battle of wits.
So Aunt May is the one lady in Peter Parker's life, one that has been
there.
She's
his rock.
She's there since the beginning. He was abandoned by his parents.
Yeah, his one true love.
A female figure in his life. Aunt May
would be Mary Jane, and Uncle Ben would be Gwen Stacy in my list then, if we were to go for that, because Uncle Ben's the one that died. He had to die for Peter Parker to become Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And just like in our list, that's why Gwen Stacy's at number two, because she had to die to make him an even better Spider-Man.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a parallel there.
Yeah. Also, right. Uncle Ben was a hot blonde. Mike is like, I don't know. Damn it, you start off strong with making a brilliant case for a fucking 90s alien symbiote, and you end with Uncle Ben was a hot blonde.
Hey, Spider-Man is your jam.
All right, so we're going to take another break.
Okay.
We've got a mailbag to read through.
Ooh.
But first, we promised it, or I did, Romance Comics Theater.
Yes.
Unrelated to Spider-Man?
Unrelated to Spider-Man. Here's a cute little play by people we love.
And that one person we hate. But I'm not telling you which.
Love is a million miles away. A DC romance featurette.
He might have been on the moon for all the comfort it gave me. Bill, how I miss you. How anxious, how wildly excited I was when a letter came. Oh, darling. But the aftermath was always the same. I'm sorry you wrote, dearest. It makes me realize how far away you are and how much I miss you. And sometimes, when I went for a walk, only to try and escape my memories. Every other girl is with the one she loves, except me. And for me, it was another lonely night of tears. I can't go on like this. I can't. Then one day, my best friend Peggy came over to the house, and to my shock,
Joanne, this is my cousin Bob. He'll be staying at our place for a few weeks, and I think you do have a lot in common.
But later, when Bob asked me to go out with him, I like you, Bob, from the first moment you came in, but I'm going steady. Didn't Peggy tell you?
Yeah, she told me all about your steady, but he'll be gone for 3 long years and...
But I refused to listen to anyone, and a few days later, when all 3 of us went to the movies one afternoon, I could learn to like him, an awful lot, but I already am in love, so I thought it best not to see him again, even with Peggy around. But I feel awful. I should be thinking only of you, darling, not of Bob. I wrote Bill a 10-page letter that evening, but even after I finished, my mind still keeps slipping back to Bob. What kind of person am I anyways? And next day, I couldn't wait to see Peggy. How could you introduce me to Bob when you knew that I was in love with Bill? How could you cause me to suffer like this?
Are you suffering, Joanne? And if you are, have you asked yourself why? If you're so sure about your feelings for Bill, why should Bob be bothering you so much?
I don't know.
Then maybe I can tell you, Joanne. Because you no longer love Bill. Because you've fallen in love with Bob.
Don't say that, Peggy. Why are you torturing me like this?
I'm trying to force you to tell the truth, that's all. Admit it, Joanne. Admit what I said is true.
All right, it's true. Are you satisfied now? Then, all of a sudden, Peggy stopped acting like Lady Macbeth and started acting like the cat who'd licked up all the cream.
Yes, completely satisfied, Joanne. And now I can show you this.
What is it?
As you can see, a letter from Bill telling me he fell in love with a girl who lives near his camp and asking me if I would break the news to you.
So you introduced me to Bob only to help soften the blow?
Yes, but don't make it sound so cruel. You see, Bob had already seen you and wanted desperately to meet you.
I turned then at the sound of his footsteps.
And falling in love with you was just about the easiest thing I ever did in my whole life.
Love was no longer a million miles away. It was right there, in my arms. The end.
Love is a Million Miles Away, from DC Comics Young Love number 61, May-June 1967, art by J. Scott Pike. And of course our cast of actors, Joanne by Cassidy Gaudette, Peggy by Nathalie Gauguet, and Bob by Bas Levesque.
All right, we're
bravo,
back.
Bravo.
The ladies were great, the guys, meh.
You said that and you were in it.
We've got some Lonely Hearts comments.
Woo! Ooh, there's a lot of comments.
Oh, there's a lot of comments. Big comments. Jesus.
Someone writing a thesis?
Tolstoy doing comments now?
Well, I think there's a Diablo Frank comment.
Well, I actually saw him retweeting some of the podcasts, so I figured, he's listening.
He's listening
and he's
to
going
number,
to comment.
Okay. Let's go with that because he's up to episode 9.
Yep.
The Supergirl.
Yep. Oh, man.
Oh.
Did you watch last night's episode?
I did not.
No, I'm bad. Also late. I'm also late.
Oh, my God, guys.
All this talk about Centaur romance has me thinking about the oeuvre of Kevin J. Taylor for some reason. Anyway, I was tempted to buy the recent Supergirl omnibus on the promise of gloriously weird comic book crap like this, but then I thought about the cost and passing novelty and all that bland Jim Mooney-drawn Silver Age boilerplate. I'd rather read and watch someone attempt that type of material now rather than suffer through mildly amusing naive inanity in the original stories.
But it's cool.
But Centaur love.
Supergirl and Bill/Comet's entire relationship is based on a lie maintained by the Super Horse, for the record.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
It's nice to hear a bunch of bros.
That's us.
We're not bros.
Not really.
Come on, we like to bro out.
We don't bro out.
Come on.
We're not really.
Come on.
Are we?
No, we're not.
It's nice to hear a bunch of bros get together to have a discussion about the Supergirl show without eye-rolling, dismissal, and macho posturing. See, because we're not bros.
When we don't must. Well, we don't.
Yeah, bro. I love Supergirl, bro. Yeah. You're mad feminist, man. Supergirl's my lady.
That said, I expect to tackle the show myself in some podcasting capacity eventually, so I don't want to get into it too much here. Okay. I like James Olsen, and he's been the only viable love interest introduced for any other character in the show. Max was rendered radioactive by the Bizarro episode, so Alex cannot have anything to do with him unless they want to ruin that character too. The Hank-Alex relationship is 100% familial, so unless you guys are mixing incest into the bestiality, that's just wrong-headed. I was just having fun. I'm bringing incest into it.
Yeah.
This is the one. Spider-Man fucks Uncle Ben show. This is the episode.
I told you, it was platonic. Okay. But you kept trying to make me say, I ship Uncle Ben and Peter Tumblr.
So I'm the villain.
SpideyBen.tumblr.com.
For the record, we do not condone incest.
Of course not.
We frown on that.
We do not condone insects.
We frown on that, too.
Spider-Man? Wait, no, he's an arachnid. Shit!
The writing on the show is pretty ungood, he says, so I watch it for my love of the characters and for the 2 to 10 minutes of engaging material smuggled into each atonal, directionless hour.
Oh, Jesus.
He's going to ruin it for people.
Why? At first I thought he was talking about our show.
No. Like, I listened to it for Supergirl. 2 to 10.
Oh. It's good. Shut up.
Ungood.
You can't hate everything like that. It's not. That's, you can't do that. You gotta like.
I
something.
Believe he just has.
Who does he think he is, Zack Snyder?
I think that's.
I know he refused to go see that movie.
Oh, shit!
It's one thing that
because it would have gone off his hate meter.
Would have gone all the way back around.
Yeah, the other two guys from the Rolled Spine podcast had to go alone and do the podcast alone.
Oh no!
Oh
no!
Just to keep the rage monster at bay.
Yep. You know what? I don't believe it. I think it's posturing. I think he's a love monster, and he loves things.
Actually, apparently, in real life, I've spoken to him.
You sound like you want to give him a belly rub. Who's your good love monster?
I do. He's like Grimace from the McDonald's.
There's the Frank when you're talking to him directly, and then there's the Frank that's the
Hulk Frank.
Hulk Frank.
He turns into something. I haven't met the gentleman, so I don't know. Yeah. I'm just kidding around.
I don't think I've ever made the connection between the loss of General Eiling to the underused Shaggy Man and the revival of Sam Lane as Thunderbolt Ross. I have mixed feelings about that maneuver, but if they could make TV General Lane less of a bigoted idiot and use him as the understandable human resistance to metahumans that Max Lord should have been, I could be down with that. Man, I love that the show at least tries to take advantage of comic book lore, but some of their misappropriations are as awful as that of current DC Comics writers-editors. If they needed a Lex Luthor proxy, why not give Max Lord a similar arc as Smallville Lex, where it takes several seasons for a full heel turn and the audience is rather sympathetic to it? Have Max legitimately, if self-servingly, try to help Supergirl and the DEO, only to be abused and lied to, and become a justifiably paranoid adversary.
Well, so I think, Jesus, there's more!
Who simultaneously tests Alex's loyalties and necessitates the existence of Checkmate as a counterbalance. But the writing on Supergirl is in some ways even dumber, short-sighted, and otherwise adrift than The Walking Dead, which I don't watch. So I'm asking a lot.
Okay. Well, let's pause there. First of all that...
There's another paragraph!
I know. I just want to address one thing there. I love that he basically says, God damn it, you guys, for saying something to make me think that what they're doing on the show is actually fun, and then follows up with, like, a rant, which entirely his right.
That's fine.
And to that, I'm going to say, did you watch this week's one? Because they actually address a whole bunch of stuff in that. I'm not going to say what, because I know you guys aren't caught up.
Yeah, but don't ruin it first. But you know what? I think they're doing that with Toyman Jr., actually.
When
is going to turn? That's what I think is going to happen. Going to turn. He's going to be
first. Fern's on Team Win.
I'm on Team Win.
He's on Team Win.
I know,
on
but Win. If I was writing this...
Don't ruin Win for me.
Heartbreak would ruin Win. And
I'd make Jimmy Olsen turn.
turn Jimmy.
I think Max is
I turn Jimmy.
Take off that shirt and turn.
Oh no, Turtle Boy. Okay.
Isn't there one where he turned into a gorilla?
Let's just get through, if we can.
Oh God, there's more.
Frank's entire thing.
Frank, why do you hate
us? Last paragraph from Frank.
Staring into the arc.
No, he likes us. He hates what other people are doing.
You know how DC...
Close your eyes.
Shush. You know how DC loves to do stories about how White Power and Man-Man go off on a picnic together?
So that's why you laughed at the arc, with a White Power.
With even older, maler, and more Caucasian Earth 2 Greatest Generation versions of their mantles to bond over rehashes of their 40-plus-year-old adventures?
What?
This is a golden age.
This is gold.
I like to imagine that's also when groups of heroines and minority heroes go off to discuss all the spectacular cases they've had that went completely unreported. You know, like that time Eclipso took over the Legion of Superheroes, half of which had managed to trap the JLA Titans and Outsiders in their own bases, while the other half had just launched an invasion of Earth before being routed by Zatanna, Cyborg, Dr. Light 2, Anima, Bloodwind, and Vibe. So yeah, Why not have Supergirl and Madame Xanadu turn out to quietly be besties who team up to defeat Cersei, who sounds more dangerous as a Supergirl foe than a Wonder Woman one? I think that was just a big spiral to get us to the Cersei reference.
Wow.
Well, I mean, that's a great ride, though.
Let's move on to other people.
Can we?
Yes.
After that, can we move on?
This was like old news. That was episode 9. So now on to episode 10.
Oh, he listened to more?
No, not him.
Oh, okay.
So the tomboy. Oh, yes, I believe.
We should have.
No, Frank also commented on episode 10. All right, we'll get there.
For the record, I like Frank.
Episode 10 was the tomboy episode.
Oh, yeah. I like that one also.
Let's see if we got into hot water there.
Let's see.
Probably.
Rob from the Film and Water podcast said, enjoyed this especially potty-mouthed yet deep episode of LHRCP. As usual, Romance Comics Theater was a winner. If I knew any girls, I'd add this feature to all my podcasts.
Nerd problems. See,
I love that he puts it into an acronym, LHRCP, because it makes me think of the RHCP, Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh.
Which one of us is Flea? Who plays bass naked with a sock on his
head? That's probably me.
Okay. Yeah, that's you. That's you.
Mike is the one playing bass nude with a sock on his
head. I'm a bassist.
Yeah. I'm Will Ferrell. I play drums in the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, great. Wonderful.
Sally P.
I'm the other guy.
You're the other guy.
Sally P. said, well, this is about as subtle as a sledgehammer.
welcome to the Thunderdome, Sally.
She meant the theater.
Okay,
right.
The theater about the girl who... Chris Franklin of the Supermates said DC was skirting the L-word subject in their girl comics of the late 60s, early 70s. Mm-hmm. In her non-powered karate-chopping phase, Wonder Woman ran afoul of some evil ladies with code verboten inclinations, or at least that was suggested. The Romance Comics Theater segment was a hoot, as always. Mm-hmm. Not sure what's up with her pants in that first panel. Those would look bad on anyone.
Oh, yeah, when I said the outfit looked like Charles Xavier.
Yeah, actually.
She was very military.
As for tomboys, I think you guys hit the nail on the head. One thing the comic got right was tomboy girls tend to cut through the stereotypical claptrap that young girls often feel like they have to engage in. They are usually straight shooters due to their independence and therefore more appealing.
Yeah, I think.
So, Chris, is Cindy a tomboy?
I hope she is.
Probably is, because
high five
if
that lady.
Ever listen to any of their shows, he gets punched on the arm so hard. So hard.
I'm going to punch you on the arm so hard. The next Bison wannabe's going to feel it.
Cindy's great. I'm just trying to avoid punches.
And so comment if you want me on next podcast to punch Mike in the arm.
Oh, no, please don't.
If it hits 5,000 retweets, I'm going to crack him in the jaw.
Okay, 5,000 retweets, fine.
5,000 retweets, crack him right in the jaw. We live 3 streets away from a hospital, and it's Canada, universal healthcare. Fuck you. 10,000 retweets, I'm punching him again. At the hospital.
Ange said, very fun episode. My definition of tomboy is a little different than yours.
Oh, really?
Well, them's fighting words. Too bad. Next comment.
sorry, Ange.
He says, I think not only of masculine traits of strength and leadership, but also an outward appearance that leans more masculine.
Like,
I would never, ever call She-Hulk a tomboy. But I do think there's an appeal to tomboys, mostly because I think guys in general think they can relate and understand them more. I think more like anybody in West Side Story, the boyish girl hanging out with the Jets. So in comics, I think they are a rarer beast. I guess the closest I can think of is Shrinking Violet in the post-Great Darkness Saga Legion through 5 years later. She is usually depicted with short hair, rugged, and in pants. Sorry I wrote so much about Supergirl last time. Trust me, that was the short version of my comments. Thanks again for a great show. Vera Wild.
Ooh, Vera.
Vera says, tomboys are a funny thing to talk about.
Yay.
It is.
Yes, the comedy. Because I think that increasingly it's a term that is losing its usefulness.
Yes, it is.
It is.
It seems like society... Yeah, that's why one of the problems we had talking about and defining it, I think, was exactly that.
Yeah.
She says, it seems like society is finally starting to realize that interests, hobbies, and pastimes are not inherently gendered. No. We've just deemed them to be. We've still got a ways to go on this front, but I'm seeing progress where, for so long, nobody questioned the idea that it was strange for a girl to like to build things, or for a boy to be into sewing. Sewing. But
no, okay.
Either way, swing.
Yeah, no,
swing or sewing.
Yeah.
You guys touch briefly on the issue of men being perceived as girly as bearing a greater stigma than women being perceived as manly. The reason for that is simple enough. Manly characteristics are seen as inherently good things.
Yep.
Therefore, a woman being tomboyish, though perhaps seen as abnormal by some, is still exhibiting traits that are considered good things. Mm-hmm. Strength, determination. Eh? Yeah. However, traditionally feminine traits are viewed much less favorably in and of themselves. So a man who possesses those traits is immediately seen as deficient, whereas a woman being manly tops out at being simply weird, barring the lesbian connotations, but the linking of needlessly gendered activities to sexual preference when there is no inherent connection between the two outside of what society deems would be a whole other rant, which I'll spare you.
Oh, man. Oh, no, man. Actually, you know what?
I want to hear that rant.
That is a very, very valid point.
She says, so was that Tumblr enough for you guys?
It was.
Yes.
Great episode as usual.
Hey.
I mean, she listens often. Okay.
Good.
Martin Gray.
I hate that guy. No, I don't.
The guy in the painting? Who never dies?
No.
Dorian.
No.
That's Dorian Gray?
That's Dorian Martin.
Martin Gray from Scotland and from the Too Dangerous for a Girl blog.
Okay.
Says, Vera.
Too Dangerous for a Girl commenting on the Tomboy episode.
Well,
the answer is Vera.
Oh, how the tables have turned.
He answers Vera. Says, are you new around these parts? Great comments. May we keep you in a non-possessive, non-patriarchal way, of
yes,
course.
Yes, thank you.
And lads, great episode as always. Liz, who was the character in the story,
yes,
looks a bit like Mike Sikowski era Linda Danvers, but as Ange never pointed this out, I may be imagining it. And typical Ange, I was reading his post, thought I'd mention anybody's, and he mentions anybody's. I'm old, but I'm still not so old that girls wearing trousers or having short hair at school was worthy of comment. Mind, there was a British comic character called Tomboy.
Oh, really? Hmm. Actually, this reminds me of girls wearing trousers. I saw a tweet the other day, and it was this lady who said, and again, for the 1,967th time, I've entered the wrong bathroom because I've made a habit of wearing pants. And especially with in the U.S., there's this whole new bathroom law that they're trying to pass.
Right.
And we're not going to get into that because,
thank
no.
you. Vera sort of schooled us. Well, yeah. Schooled us. I mean, I agree with everything she said.
She's on point, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Hells yes.
Yeah, she's just more eloquent than we were.
Oh,
yeah, well, yeah.
We are.
That's a lady trait.
Well, she's right. She's writing it down and in her first language, I imagine. So,
there you go. We're knuckle dragon goons.
But let's see what Diablo Frank had to say.
Is Diablo back?
He's back.
Woo!
Diablo.
On the theater thing, I think, he says, no offense to the Fire and Water Podcast Network All-Stars, but I'm well familiar with the southern United States, and its accents hold no allure for me. I missed my romance comics theater French girls with their comparatively obscure rhythms and ooh-la-la inflections. Speaking of the South, there was still the ghost of a stigma about tomboys when I was growing up, but more as something merely recalled, like a nostalgia for biases past. I do recall girls being teased for failing to shave their legs, if such was visible past the panty line. The pant line, I mean, not the panty line. I wouldn't say that I was a sissy or a Nancy boy, but I was always bookish and shy, so I'd be a straight version of the Truman Capote character who grew up with and routinely dated Scout Finch. None of my girlfriends have ever worn makeup or dresses outside special occasions, and while I'd have liked a little bit more of that, I doubt I'd have much patience with a girly girl. Also, it's probably a byproduct of my own feminine passivity, since I'm typically the pursued recluse of atypically aggressive women. That said, I've still got my macho tendencies. I once knew a mistress who told me she worked as a switch, meaning she was the top or bottom as the mood or situation prompted. I get that, since my own relationships aren't so binary as me Tarzan, you Jane. When there's a critter loose in the house or a scary part in a movie, I'm the dude, but I'm likely to be called to such a task while soaking in the tub listening to some folk rock chick while reading Jezebel. It's 2016. Labels are for simple-minded losers.
So I'm just imagining him in a candlelit bath listening to Elliot Smith.
Are you, Fern?
Yes.
And you're imagining Diablo Frank in
yes,
his bath.
Just candlelit bath.
Candlelit.
Elliot Smith smooth in the background. You know, I just opened a bottle of Merlot.
I was thinking Annie Franco. You know, folk lady.
You know, Fiona Apple.
Yeah. Just,
like, volume goes up to 10. He's got it at like 4. Yeah. And the lights are dim.
I listen to an absurd amount of what I'd call chick rock.
Yes, you do.
I love it.
And it's good. It's okay. It's okay. Meet 90s hip hop. But, you know, whatever.
Hey, hey, you know.
And then,
find
you know,
your joy.
Exactly. You know, find your joy.
Right.
That's it's like I have a theory. And it's Donald Trump is really has a weird kink where he loves to get publicly shamed. And his dominatrix writes these really shitty, horrible speeches for him, and that's how he gets off.
To each his own. Find your joy, Donald Trump.
And if, you know, it's saying, you know, we're going to build a wall and Mexico's going to pay for it, I mean, and that gives you a boner, well...
It's, this is off topic. Now,
yeah, but it's great.
We also got a few Facebook comments. They're always a little bit shorter. Martin Gray on there said he loved the show. It is as smart as it is entertaining.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
That's either a great compliment or a really shitty backhanded.
It depends
compliment.
How smart it is. Yeah. Right? Ryan Daly said, enjoyed the kicking with feet comment. That's you, Bass.
Yeah. Kicking with
second feet. Language humor. And Robert Ward here said, don't try anything lesbian because you'll eventually find a man.
What?
Was the moral of the comic.
Oh, okay.
I personally think...
He was giving us like some kind of a weird warning.
No, he says... Well, the comic was. He personally thinks that it was totally an unintended subtext and was more directed to dealing with teenage awkwardness and low self-esteem and hope. But then again, I may be too close to those feelings, he says. And a lot of people privately didn't want to go on record, but said, oh, yeah, she's called Liz. Sounds like Les.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know how overt it actually was for the comics writer.
Well, was this one sponsored by the Comics Code Nazi Party of America or whatever?
It was a comic-coded... It was a code.
It might not have been that thinly veiled or intentional, because... Well, didn't they censor a lot of stuff?
Well, yeah, but that's it. They might have missed it. So let's be edgy, and we'll call her Liz, and the people who know will know. The people, some people will get it.
Is Liz a lesbian? Lesbian? Oh my God, we said yes to this?
We also got some Facebook likes and shares. Let's read them off. Facebook likes and shares from Kevin Barrett, Gene Hendricks, Nathalie Gauguin, Mike Gillis, Clinton Robison, Coffee and Comics Blog, Nicholas Prom, Jimmy McGlinchey, Shag Matthews, Mike Arsenault, Ruth Sutherland, Max Romero, Mark M. Ryan, Will Harbaugh, and Michael Wagner with Twitter retweets and favorites, some comic reflections, Cindy Womack, Coffee and Comics Blog, Sin, Luke Dobb, and Diablo Frank. Now, Fern, just for our contest, just for our 5,000 retweets that gets me punched in the face, that was six.
Okay.
Six. Maybe not retweets. They're just favorites.
Okay, favorites. All right.
They may be retweets.
You know what?
So to get the 5,000, I think I'm safe.
Yeah, okay. You know what? I think we
and
need
to... And it's got to be before the next show.
We need to tap into that Google Plus gang.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Google Plus likes and shares, and this is where you play the lonely man from The Incredible Hulk. Na 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 na. Just a song on the side of a street going...
It's a duffel bag.
Okay, so if you do this all day. If you do want to leave a comment,
please do.
Actually, you should probably leave it on the fireandwaterpodcast.com site, where all our family, our entire network of podcasts is available.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear from you there, especially if you're going to leave a long message.
Yes.
But we also appreciate it if you leave the message on the Facebook page.
Or tweet us.
Or tweet us.
Specifically retweet us. Create multiple accounts to retweet it. if we do reach 5,000 retweets, I will film myself punching Mike in the face and upload it. And
I don't want that to happen. People are not going to retweet just so it doesn't happen.
This is the internet, Mike. They will retweet like 100,000 times to save this goddamn puppy that was thrown in a river in the Ukraine because everybody in the U.S. is losing their goddamn mind.
This is saving a puppy.
Yeah.
This is causing harm.
Exactly.
If we get
what do people want to see more than their heroes on a pedestal? Them heroes fucking fall.
You know what? I think if we get to 10,000, we should get a GoPro camera and put it on Fern's wrist and film it first-person view.
Sam Raimi weapon cam. I am down for this. And I will. And the other hand will be holding my phone, so you will just see a camered fist just go straight into his jaw.
I am not. 15,000. I repeat, I am not taking a punch in the face.
15,000 for putting that camera on Bass's hand immediately afterwards.
20,000, Siskoid puts on a ninja outfit and then gets punched.
I'm not getting punched in the face.
30,000 retweets, I will let Mike kick me in the sack. But you see, it's great because you know what? By then, he's been punched by myself and filmed by Bass and filmed. So it's like, you know what? I deserve this shit. I deserve a kick in the sack. But we've hit 30,000 retweets. We're going to MAGFest, buddies.
Hey, thanks for being there. And if you do leave a comment on Twitter, please use the hashtag FWPodcasts.
50,000 retweets, we bring back Marty.
So thanks for listening, and thanks for retweeting a moderate amount. Until next time, if there is a next time, if I'm not in the hospital, we'll see you in a few weeks with another episode of Lonely Hearts, the Romance Comics Podcast.
Love you guys. Here's to the losers. Here's to the losers. Bless them all. Hey there! Are you tired of listening to crap? Listen to Invasion First Strike! Shut up, nerd!
That is not our promo.
I'm doing music.